A high near 90. It's 86 now in Jacksonville at Talk Radio WBLB. I'm speaking plainly with Bill Hay in 30 minutes.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, Medical Director and Physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining.
Need to find someone who knows exactly what the hell this thing is.
Are you familiar with genetic editing? Changes will be incredibly unpredictable. Increased strength,
Gorge!
Speed, agility.
No!
That was a clip from the trailer of a new movie starring Dwayne Johnson, alias The Rock. And the movie's called Rampage. It's generally about the star saving the world from the havoc wreaked by giant mutant animals produced by the misapplication of a new science called CRISPR technology. I think we mentioned CRISPR in passing on the last show, but CRISPR stands for Clustered Regularly Interspaced Short Palindromic Repeats, whatever that means. Anyway, it's the hallmark of a bacterial defense system that forms the basis for CRISPR-Cas9 genome editing technology. Again, whatever that means.
This, in as few words as possible, is a system that can be programmed to target specific stretches of genetic code and to edit the DNA at precise locations.
We will start with a very brief history of CRISPRs. They were first discovered in a type of microbe called archaea by Francisco Mojica, a scientist in Spain. He said that CRISPRs were part of the bacterial immune system and were used in a defense against invading viruses.
He said that they consist of repeating sequences of genetic code interrupted by spacer sequences, remnants of genetic code from past invaders.
That's what made the SPR portion of the CRISPR's name, which stands for Short Palindromic Repeats. A palindrome meaning a word, phrase, or sequence that reads the same backwards as forwards. For example, the word mom or dad or madam are palindromes, as is the word race car and the phrase nurses run. Later I'll give you one of the longest and my personal favorite palindrome.
Anyway, back to CRISPRs. The system serves as a genetic memory that helps the cell detect and destroy invaders.
The CRISPR spacer sequences are rewritten in the cell into short RNA sequences, which are then capable of guiding the system to matching sequences of DNA.
When the target DNA is found, an enzyme called Cas9 is produced by the CRISPR system. This binds to the DNA and cuts it, shutting the target gene off.
Using modified versions of Cas9, the researchers can then activate gene expression instead of cutting the DNA. This allows researchers to study the gene's function. The human sequence is made up of 3 billion letter sequences, and the CRISPR-Cas9 combo can be used to target and modify, let's call it, typographical errors of the sequence in order to treat genetic disease. What makes CRISPR unique in the researchers' armamentarium to change genetic code is that CRISPRs do not need to be paired with separate cleaving enzymes as most of the other tools do. They can also easily be matched with tailor-made guide sequences designed to lead them to their DNA targets.
Tens of thousands of such gRNA sequences have already been created and are available to the research community. CRISPR's CAS9 can also be used to target multiple genes simultaneously, which is another advantage that sets it apart from other gene editing tools.
Now we come to CRISPR-CPF1, and it differs from CRISPR-CAS9, which we've just described. CRISPR-CPF1 differs in several important ways from CAS9, with significant implications for research and therapeutics.
First, the enzyme CAS9 forms a complex with two small RNAs, both of which are required for the cutting activity. On the other hand, the CPF1 system is simpler in that it requires only a single RNA.
But even more important in the scheme of things, CPF1 cuts DNA in a different manner than CAS9. By that we mean that when the CAS9 complex cuts DNA, it cuts both strands at the same place, and this leaves blunt ends that often undergo mutation as they're joined.
However, with the CPF1 complex, the cuts in the two strands are offset, leaving short of a hangs on the exposed ends. This is expected to help with the precise insertion, allowing researchers to integrate a piece of DNA more efficiently and accurately.
There is another advantage to CPF1, since they cut far away from the recognition site, meaning that even if the targeted gene becomes mutated at the cut site, it can likely still be recut, allowing multiple opportunities for correct editing to occur. Now, there are other advantages, but you can look them up on scholar.google.com. So what can we do with all this knowledge?
CRISPR genome editing allows scientists to quickly create cells and animal models, which researchers can use to accelerate research into diseases such as cancer and mental illnesses.
Not only that, CRISPR is now being developed as a rapid diagnostic tool. One good use would be for the researchers to permanently modify genes in living cells and organisms, and in the future may make it possible to correct mutations at precise locations in the human genome in order to treat genetic causes of disease. So while movies freak us out with the bizarre and malignant uses of new research, at least it helps to disseminate the science to more people so all of us can get to learn about, in this case, CRISPR.
Just last month, there was an entire supplement provided by Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News in their monthly magazine.
We recently expanded on the disease known as Parkinson's disease. Now, if you listen to that show, you know that Parkinson's disease is a neurologic or nerve disease that affects many people worldwide. You'd also know that a person who has Parkinsonism may also have another disorder that causes additional neurological problems, and these can range from dementia to the inability to look up and down.
As we said, Parkinson's disease in cell refers to dysfunction and cell death. What is important here is that this portion of the brain is the one that produces the infamous dopamine.
And dopamine is a neurotransmitter that is a chemical that transmits signals between the brain and the nerve cells. It's partially responsible for making controlled movements in the body.
Well, a study has now been done that seems to show that vitamin B3 may actually stop brain cell death that occurs in Parkinson's disease.
Never heard of vitamin B3? Well, maybe you know it better as niacin. It is just one of the 8 B vitamins, and it plays a role in converting the food we eat into energy. It helps the body to use proteins and fats, and it keeps the skin, the hair, and the nervous system healthy. And it may also reduce cardiovascular risk because it can be used to treat high cholesterol.
There is some evidence that it may reduce blood pressure because it is a vasodilator. Vitamin B3 is also known as nicotinamide, nicotinic acid, and vitamin PP because it prevents a disease called pellagra.
Any niacin the body does not need is excreted in the urine. It's not stored in the body, and therefore it must be consumed daily. So all the body's vitamin B3 needs can be obtained through a healthy diet. Excessive alcohol consumption is the main reason for a lack of vitamin B3. And it's also been reported in patients with anorexia nervosa. So how do you know if you're deficient in niacin?
Let's look at the symptoms. First, there is fatigue. There may also be indigestion, vomiting, circulatory problems, depression, canker sores, and possibly a problem with balance.
With severe lack of vitamin B3, the patient may get pellagra, with symptoms of skin problems, dementia, and diarrhea.
And not just that, pellagra, it can be fatal.
So getting back to niacin and its role in Parkinson's disease, there's a form of vitamin B3 called nicotinamide riboside that helps to preserve nerve cells by boosting their mitochondria, which are the energy-producing centers of all of our cells.
This substance appears to stimulate the faulty energy metabolism in the affected nerve cells and protects them from dying off.
Parkinson's disease is a condition that worsens over time, and it arises due to death of neurons or nerve cells in a part of the brain that happens to be responsible for movement. As we said earlier, the cells produce a chemical called dopamine that is important in controlling movement. As the disease progresses, walking, coordination, and balance all become increasingly difficult. Other symptoms such as sleep disruption, memory problems, fatigue, and depression may also develop. Now, this is not a rare disease. In fact, there are about 1 million people living with Parkinson's disease in the United States, where 60,000 new cases are diagnosed every year. That's about 164 a day, or you could say one every 10 seconds.
Most believe that Parkinson's disease results from genetic and environmental factors working together.
All of our cells contain hundreds of tiny mitochondria that, among other things, convert food into energy for the cell.
Mitochondria are organelles found in the cells of every complex organism. They produce about 90% of the chemical energy that cells need to survive.
No energy, no life. When mitochondria go wrong, serious diseases are the result. However, mitochondria do much more than just produce energy.
They also produce chemicals that your body needs for other purposes, break down waste products so they are less harmful, and recycle some of those waste products to save energy.
Nerve cells are particularly dependent on mitochondria because they just need more energy than most other cells. In the case of Parkinson's disease, studies have shown that the dopamine cells that die off have damaged mitochondria. So researchers pondered if faulty mitochondria are a cause or whether they are merely a side effect of the disease. So how did they do this?
First, they took skin cells from individuals with Parkinson's disease who carry versions of the GBA gene that are known to increase risk for the disease.
Then they got the skin cells to regress into immature stem cells. Finally, they coaxed these stem cells to become nerve cells. These nerve cells show similar mitochondrial dysfunction as they found in the brain cells in Parkinson's disease.
To test whether it might be possible to trigger the growth of new mitochondria in the cells, the team increased their levels of the coenzyme nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide, or NAD.
What they did was give the cells a form of vitamin B3 called nicotinamide riboside, which is a precursor of the coenzyme. This caused the NAD levels to rise in the cells and resulted in new mitochondria and increased energy production. And vitamin B3 led to fewer dead nerve cells.
All in all, the researchers took all the information from their study results and concluded that the loss of mitochondria does indeed play a significant role in the development of Parkinson's disease.
So, administering nicotinamide riboside may be a new starting point for treatment. When we come back from our mid-show break, I'll reveal one of the longest and certainly my favorite, palindrome.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 29 years. We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show.
Have gun, will travel, reach the card of a man. A knight without armor in a savage land.
No, not paladin. I said at the beginning of the show that I would give you my favorite palindrome. Remember that a palindrome is a word or phrase which reads the same both backwards and forwards. Well, here it is. A man, a plan, a canal. Panama. I'll repeat that. A man, a plan, a canal, Panama. We talked about vitamin B3. So this would be a good time to talk about some of the other vitamins that we need to lead healthy lives. So today we're going to talk about four things that we need in our daily diet. So let's start with potassium.
It is not exactly a vitamin, but it is a mineral that your body needs. It plays a key role in keeping your blood pressure low and may improve problems with kidney stones and bone loss.
For most adults, the recommended amount is about 4,700 milligrams a day. Can you guess the best single source for potassium? Well, it's the potato.
A small potato has about 740 milligrams of potassium, but you do not have to eat six potatoes daily to get your minimum of potassium. You can add carrots, oranges, tomatoes, and even prunes to your diet.
Still not satisfied? Then add beans, such as white beans, lima beans, and soybeans. Now, fish is another way to stock up on potassium, especially halibut, tuna, or cod. But I hate tuna or cod, so just eat them for the halibut. Sorry for that pun, but maybe it'll get you to remember that these fish are also good sources of potassium.
Also, if you are not vegan, put some dairy products in your shopping cart. The next time you are in the supermarket, milk and yogurt are two good choices.
There's been a lot of fear of getting too much sun, so many, especially in the summer, are slathering on the sunscreens to prevent skin cancer.
One unintended side effect of all this sun protection is that some people, about 20% of the population, are low in vitamin D.
Vitamin D, however, is important, since it works in conjunction with calcium to make our bones stronger. As adults, we need to get about 600 international units of vitamin D each and every day.
And if you're over 70, you need more than 800 units. The problem is that there are not many foods that give us vitamin D.
Fatty fish like salmon, tuna, and sardines do. It's also found in egg yolks. But many of us eat only the egg whites, so you may miss a good source of vitamin D there.
Milk and orange juice are good ways to get the nutrients, especially if the manufacturer has added some in.
So you just might want to look for the words fortified with vitamin D on the label. There's another source of vitamin D, mushrooms that are grown in sunlight. Some packaged mushrooms actually now advertise 100% of the daily value of vitamin D.
When we talk about potassium, we mention calcium, another necessary mineral. All adults need it. If you don't get enough, you run the risk of osteoporosis, a disease that weakens your bones.
But that's not all. Calcium is also important for your nerves and muscles. You need to get 1,000 milligrams a day if you're around age 19 to 50. And women over 50, as well as all adults over 70, actually need 1,200 milligrams a day. Dairy foods like milk and yogurt are good sources, but so are soy and almond milk. And some orange juices are fortified with calcium, so check the label. You can also take in some calcium if you eat salmon, kale, turnip greens, and even some kinds of tofu.
Many of us worry about fiber, which helps your digestive system and may lower your risk of heart disease and diabetes.
But did you know that the average American doesn't get enough in his diet? Every day, women should get 25 grams of fiber, and men should get around 38 grams. Best source? Beans, such as navy, white, lima, and black beans.
Most vegetables and fruits are also good ways to get fiber. So are whole grain, breads, and pastas, and oatmeal.
It's bouncing and it's shining like
sometimes life does indeed seem to bounce around like a red rubber ball. Well, second time, same story. 2 days after Leon County, Florida, Circuit Court Judge Karen Gevers ordered the state to allow the smoking of medical marijuana, the Florida Department of Health persuaded an appeals court to expedite their review. So the First District Court of Appeals gave marijuana supporters until Friday at 3 p.m. to show cause why the court should not stay the ruling of the judge, which lifted the stay on her previous ruling that halted the ban on medical marijuana. Until then, the first DCA said that there will be an automatic stay on Giver's ruling, lifting the stay of her ruling, which said that the law banning smokable marijuana is unconstitutional. Confusing? Absolutely. Judge Gevers gave the state again until Monday, June 11th, 2 days from now, to get working on a process that makes smokable medical marijuana available to patients whose doctors authorize it. Then Governor Rick Scott and the Department of Health appealed that ruling, asking the court to stop it until the court handles the appeal of her ruling that the law is unconstitutional. Judge Gevers said in her order, however, the odds are unlikely for the state to win. I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. These now include amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, cancer, Crohn's disease, epilepsy, glaucoma, HIV/AIDS, seizure disorders, chronic muscle spasms, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, PTSD, a terminal condition, as well as other ailments and conditions, including certain diseases with chronic or long-term pain. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com. where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. You can also set up an appointment for an office visit to Southside Medical Center right on the website. Again, that website is CompassionateCareJax.com. Well, we've come to the end of another Hey Doc show. Carmen and I hope that you've enjoyed the past half hour and have found it interesting, educational, and maybe just a little bit entertaining.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.